going on, y'all? You know what day it is. Another day to step into my world. Let's talk mental health, shall we? Today I let you into a long-standing friendship, which was built on support. Period. My university sister and creator of Voetry, Africa, also known as Des, and I share some naked truths about mental health and the unnecessary eye surgeries I had. So keep it locked. This is Heal, Black Girl. Heal.
Hi. Oh my gosh, hearing your voice is so
I'm like, what the hell? I'm like, I can see your smile. Like, I see you.
That's the weird part. I'm like, oh geez, like I'm thinking of the last time I was in MTL and like we went, I think there was a time we went out and there was another time you came to my like apartment for us to like chill with me and some friends, and I'm just like seeing the smile. I'm like, oh, okay, you clearly remember. It's not even a little. I'm like, oh no, that's very fresh in my mind. Anyways,
one of those homies, you know, like those friendships that was just
and it kind of sparked, like, well actually, yeah, you made it happen. I'll always tell the story, like, you made it happen. Like, here's a note. Like, what the fuck? I had to look at it, like, I always pass notes and like junior high, and like, not, I didn't really have much people to pass it in high school, but I'm like, yo, she legit just dropped. Straight up, like, you're the only black girl. It's like, this is what's happening.
Yeah.
We're gonna be best friends now. Like, I don't know what you thought was gonna happen. Anyways, yeah, that was
this
dope.
Is what it
you
is.
Just, yeah, you just made it. I didn't have an option. I didn't have a like, oh, I'm just saying hi, just check you. You just made it happen. And then I was like, oh, I actually like her. Yeah. it was not no natural thing. You just claimed me. You're just like, yep. Friend, automatic, ready, good. You didn't even know me.
Just like, yo.
Yeah.
You've always been guarded. You've always been kind
of
like had that. It's weird because you let it, it's not as if you put a wall and don't ever let someone touch you. With me, you let me in, but it's kind of like a back door. There's always a little back door, you know, and you'll let someone explore your house and touch your house and sit in your house, but there's just this back door, and I don't touch it. I don't want to disrespect. I'm like, if she wants to tell me, she'll tell me. And there were times, I have bad memories, I probably wouldn't remember details. There were times where you'd slightly open the door, you'd be like, okay, I'm going to let you know something real about me. I'm going to let you know, you'd mention, I'm just like, just personal, like family related things, and I had to learn. I'm not going to name people in your family, but you would like one by one kind of bring it out a little. I'm like, I never hear you talk about like X person or Y person, how they influenced, how they didn't influence, and you trickled some of it out to me, but oh my goodness, yeah, like I just never wanted to touch it. I'm like, I don't think they want to. I don't think they're ready. And like I said, it's weird saying guarded because I was still very satisfied with what you did let me, and it was still very fulfilling. It was still very rich. It was still very loving. You're so loving, especially during the time, like certain time, and you knew I was, you know, like attached to my home. I didn't walk out the door for no reason. And you're like, I remember the day you're like, just come see me, and you, because you were at this club and you were doing the door, in my head I let you know, I don't party, I don't this, you let me know I'm not doing none of that, I'm just sitting. Come sit. There was nothing I could say, there was nothing I could argue about, and you just loved me in that way. I don't know if love is like too strong, but that's what I felt. And I'm like, you didn't need to, you just
come show me. I need a friend. You're right there. Yeah. Tell me why. Tell me why not. You're an introvert. You don't want to talk to nobody. Just talk to me. Sit beside
That's
me.
Funny.
Every once in a while, you're like, do my job a little. Yeah. I'm like, okay, cool. And that would be maybe out of the whole week, one of the days that I left my home. I don't think you'll ever know that. You have the two. You have both guarded, but you still know how to love. And that's all I needed. I didn't need to break down all the rest that you didn't want to. You still gave me a lot of just connection. So I know that's not really an answer for, like, are you guarded? Are you not guarded? It's very complex.
But the thing is, like, I don't, like, honestly, and I'm sure it's like that for everyone. Like, I don't know about myself unless somebody shows me the reflection of it. You know, and like, you don't know how to better yourself unless somebody kind of points that out, you know? Thank you for that.
I don't know if it's a thank you. It was just my feeling.
I know this is so huge for you, and I would like, I'm so happy.
I love it. It's so mixed feelings, literally. Like, you can include this part of, you know, I just had some I got triggered out of nowhere. It's weird when it comes to mental health, not to go so specific, but there's always this term that they tend to tell you. I don't know if it's something you relate to, but the term is recovering. You know, you're constantly doing recovery, you know. It's this process that seems like it never ends. You're in recovery. It's almost like you have a thing, and for the rest of your life, you're kind of in recovery. So I got to a point these days. It's been years and years since the most dramatic things happened to me, and I talk about it so casually. It still hurts a bit, but I feel so removed. I feel like I can just talk about it. But one day recently, it was just a few days ago, I talked about it and my mind started turning, and it does that often, but I've learned so well how to pull myself back. But every once in a while, about, like, you know, once or twice every year, it flows and it overflows, and the triggered and memories. And you're just asking yourself, you know, there's no point in thinking this, there's no point in going over it, but it's still there. And there's somehow a raw part of it. I don't know if in recovery, again, like, quote unquote, you're supposed to just lose all memory, and I truly don't believe so. I don't believe so, but it's a little cliche. It's living with it, and that means so many complex things. I'm sure you know, just what is life with this, and how do you not let it define you as well? So you talk about it, but it's such a balance, because it's an epic, like you said, you can see it in my videos, it's an epic part of my life, it's a huge part of my life. I almost use it as a major marker, probably, of you for something that happened, and there's always almost like, you know, BC, before Christ, after Christ, it's like the moment. But
when we're talking about triggers, I want to bring it back to when we were in Intro to Poli Sci class.
Oh my god!
You know exactly what story I'm bringing up. Yeah. But like, we were in our groups or whatever, and it just so happened that we were like, I think it was, there was like maybe one black guy on the other side, but it was like us in the corner, the black folks. Yeah. And this one white guy was talking about something, and then turns around and he was like Africa was saying, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, what the F did this, like, as if he was referring to us being, you know, the continent of Africa, because we're all these black people. And then you looked at me and you're like, my name's Africa.
Africa, but I felt love. Like, you know how some people might just sit there and be like, oh my gosh, what did he say? You were ready.
We were gonna get into it. Like, no, like,
you were
no
so
question.
Ready to defend and be
goodness.
You were offended for me on so many levels. And you're the difference between those who sit and kind of just, you know, feel quietly offended versus this is not allowed.
No. I was gonna cut it off real quick, real flipping quick. But you know what? Like I spoke to my cousin about it because he did a lot of, like, he was helping me with a lot of tutoring with the class, and mm-hmm. and he like kind of brought it, like he's the one who kind of introduced me to triggers. I didn't really, you know, focus on that until like later on, but that's when I realized, okay, I was triggered then. But now to think about it, I was like, what was I triggered by? Like, like, I don't.
Well,
like,
honestly, I think anyone could. Yeah, honestly, I hear what you mean by trigger, but it would be so easy to, misinterpret. I think so. Maybe there's other triggers, but I think this one was pretty. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. But I hear you on triggers.
But for me, it was, I took intro to poli sci as an elective. But for you, it was like your
it was my
your
major. It was.
And so, how did you, like, I don't know where you are career-wise, but I know that you're really pushing for your arts, you know, and and political science is pretty, what's the word, like, corporate. Mm-hmm. So how did you make that transition, or how did you find balance? Were you, like, fighting between the two? Because I know while you're at Concordia, you were still doing your videography, and that was something you were so passionate about, and I couldn't figure out how were you going to, like, glue the two, you know?
It's funny because you're talking about something that you couldn't figure out. I couldn't figure it out. I was raised in a family that, you know, it's not that they put the hardest expectations on me, but there definitely was a process. You know, you do junior high, you do high school, and at minimum, my parents don't really agree, but I'm like, there was an unsaid understanding of at minimum you get your bachelor's. They didn't push masters, but there was just this understanding you go and do this. And I had to think to myself, what did I want to do? I really actually wanted to apply to Concordia's film program, but the thing is, the only option they had was if you do film production, you are going to not be able to do any minors. And that's when I had to ask the question that I'm sure a lot of artists have to ask themselves is, are you going to go all in? Mm-hmm. If I don't have minors, I felt I had no backup, no safety. And it's not embarrassing because I think about it, but it's hard to tell myself that I was so not certain, so uncertain, that I chose poli sci, because it's not because I definitely don't regret poli sci. I got to learn how to think critically. I got to challenge myself. Mm-hmm. And when I was choosing it, I knew it would be something I'm interested in. However, a lot of people, you know, took poli sci and then went on to law school. I didn't have all those plans. I just felt this is comforting, at least. And what I settled for was film studies. It still put me in the Bachelor of Arts, but it wasn't full. So just to wrap up, you're saying, how are you going to put the two together? No matter how much I avoided, not even avoided, just said, this is going to be a part-time thing. It kept coming up, And even now in my life, I have a 9-to-5. It's what it is, but art just can't. It just won't go. It won't go. It's in my veins. Any way I can incorporated in my life, it's going to, my weekends are work, my weekends are art. I know you know.
Alone, lying thinking last night, how to find my soul a home, where water is not thirsty and bread loaf is not stone. I came up with one thing, and I don't believe I'm wrong, that nobody, but nobody can make it out here alone. Alone, all alone, nobody but nobody. can make it out of here alone. There are some millionaires with money they can't use. Their wives run around like banshees. Their children sing the blues. They've got expensive doctors to cure their hearts of stone. But nobody, no, nobody, can make it out of here alone. Now, if you listen closely, I'll tell you what I know. Storm clouds are gathering. The wind is gonna blow. The race of man is suffering. And I can hear the moan. Cause nobody, but nobody can make it out here alone. Alone. All alone. Nobody, but nobody can make it out here alone.
So, yeah, as I was saying, like, Poli Sci was an elective and so far from what I had imagined what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
I still have that big old dutty textbook on my shelf.
Oh, my
And
God.
Every so often during elections, I'm like, let me look this kind of, you know,
a little,
but,
yeah.
But still,
no,
to this day,
you're
I'm
so
still,
spot on.
Yeah, I'm still in the arts. Which I have to say, I did think I was gonna lose my lifeline. And how so? In 2015, I went to see an eye doctor because I was like, I hadn't had glasses in a while and I knew I needed them. And it just got to the point where I was just like, I feel like I'm squinting too much. You know when, like, your face hurts? After a while, you're just like, this is ridiculous. So the optometrist had told me that, you know, my left eye, I believe, was hemorrhaging. And it was a slight hemorrhage, but I really needed to go and get it checked out.
Yeah.
So I go to the Royal Vic. I got a referral. I went to go see the eye people, and then they told me specifically I had to see somebody for my retinas or something like that. But at the time, the Royal Vic was shutting down.
Oh yeah, great. Yeah.
So I had to wait a year and a half until I finally got an appointment. And that's when the Glen had opened up. Now, I know people are like, well, why didn't you go somewhere else? I went to St. Mary's. I went to the General. I even went to the Jewish. And they were overbooked. And I wasn't
for a year
because I guess I was the only one who was out of the loop. And so the thing was, is that everybody who could not be seen, they knew that they had to change. They had to change hospitals for the time being. And so by the time it was time for me to get my ish together,
already,
it was like, no, like, you're going to wait just as long with them than you would if you just wait to go to the new hospital. So I was like, you know what? I'll just wait.
Just wait.
Sorry. No, that was in 2014. In 2015 is when I finally got a phone call. And they're like, you know, come in this time. By then, apparently diabetes had completely taken over my eyesight. So it's not that I was losing my sight. I wasn't losing my sight at this point. I just knew that there was something going on and it was worrying me. When I got that news, I freaked out. Of course, I was alone. And I was just, I was a mess.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like my biggest mistake in that moment was me explaining my situation. Oh, I'm not working. Or no, yes, sorry, I was working, but I'm like, I don't have much money, and I didn't, I wasn't able to take care of myself, and you know, I'm like, my mom passed away, my dad's here, and just, you know, I just spilt everything, and at that moment, it was like I became a victim, and I remember the doctor calling in a black nurse. Well, I don't know if she was a nurse or a social worker. I don't really remember her title. I knew at that moment that he was just like, hey, you're black, you can help her out. You know, and she did calm me down. She had me sign these papers. I remember asking what the papers were, because I was so distraught and overwhelmed and crying that I couldn't even read what was on the paper. But she was just like, it's just to say that we you're giving us the okay to, like, you know, to give you the procedures to heal your eyes and so on and so forth. And the doctor was telling me that it's really bad. He was just telling me that my situation was very bad. If I'm not mistaken, that same day, he just let me know that it was really bad. From that point on, I know that a lot of people, I noticed that, like, a lot of people were acting funny and moving funny, but I had to check myself, because I'm like, I don't know where I'm at mentally right now, you know? But some people look back and they're like, oh, okay, well, we didn't know that you were losing your sight. I wasn't losing my sight. I was losing my mind. I was told that I was never going to be able to dance again, and that I had to find something else to do with myself. Like, it just didn't make sense to me. I think from that moment on, for a good year, I was living in a daze. So I remember going to a naturopath, and I told them what was happening with my eyes, and he was like, okay, take this, this bush, take this tea, and, you know, and do this and dot it on your eyes and so on and so forth. I remember also I was doing, some spiritual work, with Odessa, you know? And that was just, oh man, this was just the beginning. But, like, I was also moving from one home to the next. Like, everything was just falling apart all at the same time. And I was still dancing, but you can tell I had no spirit.
This is poetry.
I treat this thing like it's a baby. The minute it cries for attention, I'm there by its side. Feed me, feed me. Feed me your attention, let me distract you from what needs to be done. We're here talking to it like it has feelings like a human. The only thing that can control this device is you. And the government. See, this is just a tool for communication. And brainwashing. This is used for networking and building a community. And reprogramming. Just like life, you need a balance of things. Your social presence should not have to be justified on social media. Social media is a pool of insecurities and validation. We go for a swim, and sometimes we stay too long in the pool. We become all wrinkly and shriveled up, like the personalities we gain online. We become so drained, numbed, and desensitized. We're entering a new era where we give too much attention to everything but ourselves. That cry for attention should be your body. The notification your body sends you when you're in dis-ease, you should tend to that. Ding! I'm hungry. Ding! I'm angry. Ding. I'm sore. Open those messages immediately. Dive into them and reply back. Don't leave them unread, because you forget about it until it starts to get overwhelming. Use the device. Don't let the device use you. Used to use it to cope, now become enemies with the smoke. The infrared after a few tokes, the anxieties it provoked. A break is all I need, the THC does not resonate with me. Locked up by paranoia, I just want to feel free. That's why I like CBD. But don't get it twisted, I can handle the herb. I just smoke indica and hybrids, sativa gets on my nerves. Literally got on my nerves this one time. I was vibrating like my phone getting spam calls. Weed isn't supposed to make me feel like this. The fuck was I smoking? I told myself I was being dramatic. I kept going until it became problematic. Went to dispensaries like it was the candy shop, trying new strands to see the effects I got. Now when I look back, I think I was just a test dummy. Dispensary weed isn't normal. Is it even grown naturally? Moral of the story, know what you're smoking. Listen to your body, because most times it's not joking.
And my question to you is, you know, like when you are in that trance, you know, mm-hmm. when your mental health is getting the best of you.
Yeah.
What are some of the ups that, or what are some of the, I'll call it a trigger. What are some of the triggers that got yeah. you out of that?
Oh geez. It's kind of a sad one. And I don't like looking at it as a victim thing, and that word is so loaded. So it's hard when I look at myself. Then I used to be so frustrated because I was mad. I didn't realize I was so angry with me for having become a victim, having become this person that lost just every sense, who lost how to keep things together, who subsequently just hit a depression. And eventually, I did get to a point where I could see myself just in that space alone. And I finally empathized with me. I don't even know how to explain it, but I empathized, and that was huge for me. But rewinding it just a little before I even got there, you ask how I got out, I feel I just got lucky. Around the time that I guess you can say I got over some kind of hump, I was so depressed. I had been committed for severe depression. They were just worried. I felt kind of like my mother betrayed me in a way, because I just kind of got cornered. And they often say if they think you're risking yourself that they can just keep you there, they literally are just like, that's nice that you think you don't want to be here, because you're not going anywhere. You have no options right now. I'll never say it was a bad thing necessarily. I'll never say I'm mad at my mom. It's just in that moment I felt like so much had slipped. I was in that hospital for a while, and I almost told myself, you know, you could live here. You could just stay here. It's not like I hadn't seen people in the hospital just never leave. You know, you go, you come back, and you're like, you're still here. So maybe that was it. I then, around that time, got the opportunity. My family member had an opening for a job. I still was in such a daze. The days just kind of melded into each other. But I did definitely know my parents were exhausted.
They were exhausted, and I did want to make the world kind of shut up. Mm-hmm. And I saw the job as a way to make people shut up. I would go, I got out, I told them I had a plan to work, and I did my 9 to 5. I got up in the morning, went, I was literally a robot because it was the type of job you could be a robot. Mm-hmm. With a robot per day, came home and no one asked me any questions because, hey, I worked 8 hours. You can't tell me nothing. I can now go to my room and I can clock out and not experience anything. Similar to what you said, I felt nothing. The things that I loved had no feeling. They had no taste. They were gray. Your art, like you said, was gray. It had no substance. My art was the exact same. Poetry, and the sad part is, I would have people telling me, you know, just write something, get into poetry, because they were hopeful. And it's not their fault, but they were hopeful I would come back, you know, the person I was. And even if it's not their fault, it was so insulting because I don't know if that person even exists anymore. It felt so unfair to try to pull this thing that's not me. It's not me. And yeah, things were dwindling, as you know, because I was committed. There was already the like worry of self-harm. And at one point, I don't really, I don't talk about it. I definitely won't go into detail, but at one point I was done. I was definitely done. Things were going to happen. Things were in motion. And it was on my birthday. It's like I was ready. I don't know why I had to be so... whatever with it, but I was told myself the birthday is today. And I got a call from a friend during, my phone happened to be by me, as sadly as the millennials we are, phone is reality, everywhere that you are, right? It's a very strange, like your last, it's a funny part. It's not even exaggerated. It's a funny part. So she called and she had no idea. And I had a short conversation with her. She called to say happy birthday. I don't really remember a time before that, really, since I had moved on my home city, Calgary, that she really called, or she always kept in touch, but she decided to call on my birthday at that time. And when that happened, it almost felt like I was interrupted. I was interrupted in my process. And what I thought to myself is, okay, this didn't work. This didn't work out. What are you going to do about it? And I was like, okay, I'm going to live. I had this little thought with myself. I'm like, I'm going to live. And if you're going to live, I asked myself the question, if you're going to live, know that you're agreeing to not complain.
Even me, when I was at my lowest, like, what is one thing that I needed or that I would have asked for in ways of support? I too was very blessed. You know, there were a lot of people that stepped in. And you know, it's also that tough love. This is like, yo, I know you need some help, just come true, you know. But at the same time, what I needed was for someone to sit me down and just be like, you're not right. You're not okay. What's up? Let's talk. You know?
I think I...
I know how I could be. I still am that way. No, I'm good. I'm good. I don't know that I'm not good until I'm like, I'm really, 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 really not good. But, you know, there were times when I was not, and I was not, I was asking for help, but in such subliminal ways, because also at that time, like, I didn't know how to ask for help. You know, it's only now that I have my son that I'm able to be like, excuse me, can somebody help me out here? You know, but back then, no, I didn't it's not that it has nothing to do with pride. I really didn't know how to ask for it. And it just seemed like everybody was busy doing their own thing. And you know what? It's only now that I hear, because of COVID, it's like, check on your strong friends. Like, yeah. People randomly will say, yo, you've always been so strong. You've always made things happen. And it's like, how come you couldn't tell me that then? Even when I made things happen for myself, I really needed help. I really needed somebody to tell me that I made something happen. Because again, when you're in survival mode, there's no presence. There's no you acknowledging what you've accomplished. It's just what's next. Okay, I'm doing this now. This works now. And while you're in the now, it's like, what am I doing later? Because, you know, like you're trying to figure things out like all the time.
Yeah.
And I hear you saying that you had support and you had people take care of, you know, those things that you couldn't take care of. And that's so super important. Whereas I felt like there were certain people that took advantage of those things that I needed help with, you know?
This is poetry.
Race is but a figment of our imaginations. What are we chasing? Mental enslavement? Imagine if we opened up our third eyes and seen past the faces. Too many colored lines of segregation. It wouldn't matter if you read the signs or blew your chance, see, it's still the matrix. See, the color of my skin does not define who I am. My ancestors fought for this land so I could stand, see. Those in power no knowledge of self can divide up their plans. That's why the education system won't teach you about yourself. I think it's a scam. They teach us how to work for wage, but not how to manage or invest. The Industrial Revolution made us economic slaves. That's why they take credit for cashing your checks. But we still gotta live our lives right until we have nothing left. Because money is not the root of all evil. The addiction to it is. And they're commercializing childhood and sending materialism to the kids, teaching them to be consumers before they learn to plant a seed into their future. In my neighborhood, we grew up thinking that happiness was found in material possessions. And a couple of my friends grew up thinking that solutions to their problems were found in automatic weapons. And a couple of my friends grew up thinking that the solutions to their problems were found in automatic weapons. See, bullets had mothers stressing and fear had us guessing until I learned to tap into my spirit to find the answers to my questions. Because see, we are all reflections of one another. We are all reflections of one another. Conceived, the Eve, the Adam was able to walk without a cane. So now ask yourself, what is love without pain? What is pain without love? What is love without pain? What is pain without love?
Lift every voice and sing till earth and heaven ring. Ring back the harmonies of liberty. Time for announcements. And this is what's going on for this week with Black History Month virtually in Montreal, Quebec. So, as I was telling you all, February 19th is this Friday, and I will be doing a virtual workshop. It will be live streamed on the CDC Facebook page, which is the Côte des Neiges Community Center page, between 1 and 2:30. So don't be late. I'll be doing a Afro-Caribbean dance workshop. Also, well, you know, like news that's going on with me. On February the 18th, I will be doing a quick interview with Alafia Peace Talk at 7 p.m. That will be on IG Live. So check me out on Instagram. I am Miss Ben. Also, what we got is on February 21st.
we have more panel discussions. Let me just get this up here. All right, so from 12 to 1 p.m., it's called We Heal Now. The purpose of this panel is to destigmatize mental health and to keep the conversation going. From 2 to 3 p.m., the workshop is Destigmatizing Mental Health in Black Communities. This workshop will help you gain a better understanding, break down barriers, and dispel the stigma associated with mental illness. And then from 4 to 6 p.m. will be the roundtable conversation, The Wheel of Emotions. This open conversation will be a space for you to be honest about how you feel and will create a safe space for others to do the same. Now listen, folks, I was at the panel, well, in the Zoom panel discussion last week, and I did enjoy it. It was such a safe space, and people were just so straight up and honest in how we were speaking about the Black community and the issues and what we love about our community and how we will better the community. And so I strongly suggest that you all show up and support one another. And even if you have nothing to say, just listen in. So you can always you can always sign up on Table Ronde or TD Presents, and then they will show you the listings for Black History Month where you can register. Even on Eventbrite, actually, you can register for the event. Also, on the 21st of February. Now, my dance peer, Cindy, who is a part of Mapu Ginen, has created a short film. And so I'm just going to read what she had written about the piece. My short film, Kase Shen, is available to stream until February 21st at the Toronto Black Film Fest. Girl, I'm so proud of you. Kase Shen is a personal thought process, a celebration of Haitian cultural heritage. This film is very close to my heart because it is the first one I ever made and directed. With this film, I wanted to showcase that we Haitians, as a nation, as a people, need to break down the stereotypes that bind us. We must embrace, celebrate, and accept every part of our culture left to us by our ancestors. You all go check out Toronto Black Film Festival and support your girl. Yeah. Also, what is going on? February 28th. Ooh, we got some stuff for the kids. Femme en emploi are putting together a workshop to talk about the history and culture of Black history within Montreal. So you all make sure that you go out and check that out. What else is going on? I'm just checking. Okay, again on the 28th, the Jaira Gospel Choir is putting on an event, a free virtual event on Zoom, and it is Black History and Gospel Music. So that is going on from 1 to 3 p.m. Also, Montreal Steppers presents The Route to Canada, which will be live on Facebook, and this will be February 27, if I'm not mistaken. We also got Wibka, who is doing Young, Gifted, and Black, and so you want to check that out as well. All of this is on Eventbrite. The information you can always find on Moi d'Histoire des Noirs. That is the roundtable for Black History Month. Now, just Google them up, check out their website. I want to just read their mission.
The Round Table of Black History Month is a nonprofit organization that promotes activities highlighting both the history and the contemporary situation of Black communities in Quebec. Their goals: to develop promotional tools as part of Black History Month, to disseminate information relating to Black History Month, to publicize events, activities held during Black History Month, to help and support organizations, individuals, and institutions wishing to become involved in Black History Month, to develop a framework in keeping with the spirit of Black History Month for community leaders working on challenges within Black communities in the social, economic, cultural, and educational sectors, to advise programming specific to Black History Month that underlines the social, cultural, educational, institutional, and economic challenges faced by Black communities. So you are a community organizer, you're putting on events for Black History Month, let them know, even if you are part of the PTA at a school, elementary school, high school, and you have something going on specifically within Black History Month, you do want to reach out to this organization. It is free of charge. You just have to go online and say, submit an event, and it's online. Now, this is specific to Black History Month. However, something needs to be created specifically for the Black community and their events that are going on all year round. I'm just saying. And I just want to give you a friendly reminder once again about my workshop this Friday. And it will be brought to you by the Côte de Neige Community Center, CDC, on Facebook Live from between 1 and 2:30. And let me just read you the workshop description. In this movement impact workshop, I'll show you to jump, gyrate, laugh, and sweat to the rhythms of the Caribbean. This is a family-oriented dance class for all levels. Come to have fun. It will also be available online until the end of the month. And folks, let our rejoicing rise high as the listening skies. Let us resound loud as the rolling seas. Keep it locked. This is Heal, Black Girl, Heal.
This is poetry.
Okay, so just a quick backstory. I come from a long line of strong women, very, very strong women, mother strong, grandmother strong, aunts, cousins, just strong women who would tell me, you do not need a man. You do not need a man. And it registered, I do not need a man. But I want a man. I want a rich man. Rich in knowing who he is and where he be going. Yes, I can support him, but I cannot show him that he is a man. Because that alone is for him to prove and exude. From the way he walks to the way he moves. From the way he talks to the way he chooses to voice his opinion without disrespecting my view. Arguments due to conflicting ideas will be more than the he said, she said, nah. Cause he is a man and not a boy. He does not cuss nor curse. We converse through better or worse. He puts me first. And as his woman, I am with him. He trips, I lift him, hooked beside him to guide him. And I will never deny him wisdom of my words, the sincerity of my smile, the reminder that I love him, if I haven't said it in a while, because I love you, a man, a rich man, rich in knowing that our bond be deeper than any depth, higher than any height man can achieve. It cannot be fathomed nor imagined, because like Adam and Eve, we are man and woman. But the fact that he is a man, I cannot show him and I will not show him, because that alone is for him.
Greetings, queens. This piece is to honor you. This piece is all about you. This piece is called Do For You. Touch yourself today, tonight, in your bed, in the shower, raise goosebumps all by yourself. Honor thy body as it was intended. Pleasure yourself, silly. Make yourself wait. Take yourself over and breathe to prolong the pleasure. Press, push, palpitate, prime yourself. Come to yourself, for yourself, by yourself. Because you feel good. My name is Tash, and that was Do For You. Honor yourselves, queens. Every day, remember, there's you and yourself.
I want to talk about being in a relationship when you're not doing so good, you know, or when you're trying to balance things out.
The silence it crashed and burned. I don't even know if I can necessarily speak on the relationship. It happened, it ended. I don't know if I can blame it on my mental health. There was already things, maybe it accelerated. There's a lot of speculation I can do. What I will say is the aftermath of having a mental health issue, you live, or at least I can't speak for everyone, but I live with the knowledge that if I ever hit the kind of low that I went to, like I said, my parents were exasperated. They you know, kept staying there for me, but like you said, with the tough love, they weren't. They're still, you know, Caribbean parents. They're still didn't want to put up with bullshit at the same time. They love me unconditionally. But it was hard for them. So they stuck with me. It actually deepened our relationship to a ridiculous level, because you always hear the words unconditional, but they had to deliver in that moment. And they stayed and they didn't go anywhere. And I've seen people in the hospital where their families stop. They don't. I'm sure there's many reasons. Maybe it's far to go, or maybe they've been so long, but for whatever reason, someone stops or people stop. And I still had someone, many, but at least definitely those two that just never left me. They just never left. They watched me at my worst. They put up with so much and they never left. What I'm getting at, though, is I think about a partner, and in my head, I'm like, anyone that I've been with after that, it will always be a nagging thing that's like, you didn't see me at my absolute worst. Would you have stayed in my absolute worst? Would you? You may never have to. And the thing that, you know, they tend to say that's reassuring is like, you know, you're never going to get back there. Obviously, they don't mean it as a promise, but, you know, you're putting so many things in motion. Yeah. That's not the direction you're going. I get it. That's great. Maybe it will never happen again, but it will always be nagging that if ever, who's going to stay with me like a parent?
But see, that's that's the problem. Is that your partner is not your parent.
I know.
And that
I know.
You can never expect that.
Expect that.
Them.
And that, yes, that's what fits with me. I would never blame someone going, it's a lot to do. I won't say put up with because I'm not, I don't want to look at myself as a burden, but it is a lot to sign up for. Not everyone signs up for that. Not everyone. Can't blame them for wanting to have, you know, a different life. So yes, I am very not afraid, but not looking forward to not being able to know someone out there will.
I have to speak on that as well because first of all, my mental health after my mother passed away. I was dating someone at the time, and as I can go on about how abusive he was towards me, but shit, I don't ever talk about how abusive I was towards him. And I have to speak on it because we're not always the victim. We barely talk about men. We barely talk about them in that state as if they're not allowed to be abused or, you know, and abuse is not physical. It's not always physical. It's mental. It's emotional. And I know for a fact I drained him, you know. I can't. But that's pretty much all I can really say. When I was having my eye surgery, I was still dating somebody, and I can't say that I had the support that I needed from that person. But they were also in a situation where they couldn't give me all the support that I needed. And I can't blame him for that because he shouldn't have been in my presence in the first place, you know, like he had no business being there. So at that point, I have to say with my eye surgery, at this point I had done laser. So I had done I had done two on my left eye and one on my right eye. And granted, I did have people, like different people at different times that had been there to support me. But again, I'm just that hardback Miss Ben who, you know, I'm just like, I don't want to disturb anybody. It's not that I don't want the help. I don't want to be a burden to you. And then there were times when I did ask for that help and it was just like, yeah, I'll help you, but, and I didn't need. Because it's either you're going to support me or you're not. And I know to everybody who's, you know, who's listening or thinking or who was even present at that time, for them it was just like, oh, she's just getting surgery on her eye, she just needs help getting from point A to point B. No, it was the mental support, it was the emotional support. And I don't think that people realize, like, your eye is beside your brain. Like, I couldn't even get up to go to the bathroom by myself. when I had my laser, first of all, when you're doing the laser, you see, like, it's like flat, it's like as if lightning is constantly mm-hmm. going in your eyes, mm-hmm. like in your yeah. head, in your brain. Yeah. And I remember my girl called me, she's like, yo, let's go to this party. And I'm like, okay, I'll go to the party. Like, what are you thinking? Like, what the hell was I thinking? First of all, my eyes yeah. should have been blindfolded at that point, you mm-hmm. know? And I'm in the party mm-hmm. and I know people are looking at me funny and I'm like, what the F are they looking at? Like, why mm-hmm. are, you know? But like, I remember this one girl just said, she's like, what's wrong with your friend? Mm-hmm. You know? And I'm just like, oh, I must not look okay. I must not, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. I even remember my neighbor had to come upstairs and had to tend to me because he had mm-hmm. seen. I couldn't even get out of bed on my own.
Yeah.
And one morning I woke up and I was like, oh, I'm like, wait a second. I'm like, I don't see out of my left eye.
Oh, jeez.
I'm like, what's... I'm like, no, I don't think that's... Like, I was not getting out of bed.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I was terrified. And I got... I called that same nurse. She was like, come now. I got mm-hmm. there as soon as I could. They looked and they're like, Amanda, you have to have surgery. And I was like, what? And I heard him and he was like, ugh, the student, and then was taking notes. And I'm like, he had a student messing yeah, around man. With my eye. Like,
yeah.
that's what, I was just like, oh my gosh, like, what happened to me? Like, what's yeah. going on? Yeah. And yeah. mind you, I can't, like, I'm full-time dancer, right? Full-time teaching. This is how I pay my bills.
Yeah.
And I could no longer work at this time. So I signed up for welfare.
Mm-hmm.
Welfare didn't think that it was that big of an issue and gave me $100 a month.
Yeah.
That's my rent, my hydro, my...